The King's Guard, written by Osprey Archer and read by Eos Rose. "Who is Eris?" asked the king near the end of sword practice. He had to know the answer to that, but he looked at Costas expectantly, so Costas said, "He's a squad leader in the third, sir. They leave for Sunis soon." "Raise your guard," the king said. Costas complied. "But who is he to you?" "My friend," said Costas. The king arched an eyebrow. "He's my best friend," said Costas, puzzled and growing alarmed. "Has he done something?" "No," said the king, and he lunged over Costas's guard and tapped his collarbone. At mess after practice, he told Eris, "The king asked about you." Eris popped his last olive in his mouth.
"Is that good?"
"I don't know," Costas admitted.
"Maybe he wants to replace you," Eris said.
He winced and spit out the pit of the olive.
"Put him off it, Costas. I'd rather be run through by Sunisian border guards."
"He isn't that bad," Costas said. "And why would he want to replace me?" Eris gathered up his dishes and nudged Costas's shoulder.
"You're crazy enough to think he's not that bad. Who wants to be guarded by a known lunatic?"
Costas frowned.
Eris messed up Costas's hair. "It's a joke. Costas, you have no sense of humor," he said affectionately, and left.
The king knocked Costas's sword aside. "Do you want to go to Sunis?" Conversation, Costas decided, was the king's new diversionary tactic. He wouldn't take the bait. The king suddenly thrust, backing Costas halfway across the guardroom.
"Well?"
he asked.
"I've heard it's warmer than Atolia in winter," Costas said.
The king pressed his attack till Costas's back was to the wall and the king's wooden sword inches from his throat.
"Yes, then?"
Costas turned his head so he wouldn't breathe the king's breath.
"I'll go where you tell me to go," said Costas.
The king moved his sword so the blunted wooden edge touched Costas's throat, bobbing along with his quick breaths. Costas was suddenly aware of the king's hook, braced against the wall above his ear.
"Do you want me to go to Sunis?" Costas asked, and realized he was holding his breath.
"What I want rarely matters very much," said the king. He smiled his most charming smile, and Costas's stomach flip-flopped.
Maybe he wants to replace you.
"Your Majesty, you are king." The king's practice sword slipped. Costas shied away. "Please, could you let me go?" The king stepped back and leaned on his practice sword.
"Costas, you spar terribly," he said.
He said that after half their sparring sessions, but usually he smiled as he said it. Costas finally found the king sitting above the throne room, perched between two rafters and reading a book.
"Ah, Costas," said the king. "Don't you ever get tired of following me? This is the only way I can get enough quiet to read."
Costas was so angry he couldn't speak.
"No wonder you can't spar," said the king. "Just running up the stairs puts you out of breath."
Costas bit his tongue savagely to keep from saying something he would regret.
"Your Majesty," he said, "you are not supposed to wander about on your own."
"I don't believe in supposed to's," the king said, flipping a page in his book. Costas wished for something to throw at him.
"Sir," he said, "why are you sending me to Sunis?"
"Well," said the king, "Tellius says you fake a Sunisian accent abominably, so I suppose I'll have to send you somewhere else."
"I don't want to go somewhere else," said Costas, voice rising.
The king bent over his book.
"They might be able to come up with something for you to do in Sunis, then," he said.
"Sir!"
"Costas, I'm reading."
Costas climbed over the rail onto the beam. That finally got the king's attention.
"Costas, Go back. Costas, arms spread to steady himself, took a step. No, he said. Another step. The beam was as wide as a folio book. You doubt my loyalty. The king was pale, astonished. No. Anger clogged Costas's throat. Or it might have been fear. He had been around the king too long. Why else would you send me away? The king shook his head. No, no, Costas, you put sheepdogs to shame with your loyalty. I've never doubted it. He stood very slowly, so as not to shake the rafter. Your sanity, on the other hand. Costas! Costas's left foot caught on a rotten place in the wood. He slipped. He scrambled at the rafters. He couldn't catch hold. He fell. The world burst into a jumble of fragmented seconds, like broken bits of stained glass. Shouting, and the king slid down a tapestry and was somehow by Costas's side. Costas, the king said, cradling Costas's head. Costas wanted to say he was fine, but then the floor vibrated like a drumhead, and his leg was on fire and a forest of boots surrounded his head. Get Petrus, the king snapped. Costas, speak to me. I'm fine, stammered Costas, and then one of the boots slipped too close and jarred his leg, and he threw up on the king's coat. I'm sorry, he said. The king shucked off the coat. Where, he demanded, is Petrus? Here, a nervous voice said, and suddenly a thin man bobbed into Costas's vision. He held a candle to look into Costas's eyes. His breath smelled of onions. Costas sneezed, and pain ricocheted up his leg. He didn't hit his head, the thin man said. He fell on his leg, said the king. I'll give him lethium. It burned in Costas's throat, but almost at once he seemed to be floating away from his body, and pain didn't matter. Costas, the king said again. My king? Mumbled Costas. Someone lifted him up. I'm sorry, he thought the king said, but it seemed so unlikely that it was probably already a dream. Costas fought free of the lethium fog to find himself in a soft bed in a warm, dark place he did not know. He thought this should bother him. He closed his eyes and was half asleep again when someone coughed softly. He fought to open his eyes. Who's there? You're awake, said the king, and Costas heard his footsteps approach the bed. The noise was a gift to let Costas know where he was. The king stirred up the embers in the fire. The room became warm and brown in the fiery light, and Costas recognized it. I'm in the royal infirmary, he said. Least I can do, said the king, who was suddenly by Costas's side. He set the oil lamp next to Costas's bed. Costas shifted and hissed in pain. I would kill the man who did this to you, the king said, if it wasn't me. The lethium fogged Costas's head so he couldn't read the king's face. I fell, said Costas. Not your fault. I wanted to make you stay. Costas squinted. The rhyme of the situation flickered just beyond his reach. So you planned to cripple me? No, the king said, and thinking of the king's missing hand, Costas blushed. No, said the king, I didn't want you to go after Eris. My duty is here, Costas said. Why would I? The king stroked his hair. Costas felt like a cat. Because you love him. He's my friend, Costas agreed. The king's hand stilled. I am an idiot, he said. The firelight flickered red along his cheekbones. Costas, confused, patted in the direction of the king's hand. And that's your way of saying, yes, yes, you are, the king asked. Costas shrugged. The king stroked his hair, soothing, and Costas lulled almost to sleep, then jerked awake. "If I'm crippled," he said. He was too tired to very much care. "Give my sword to Eris." The king winced. "The physician says you'll make a full recovery," he said, and tugged Costas's hair. "I didn't expect you to fling yourself off the rafters to prove your loyalty. A simple, 'I don't want to go to Sunis,' would have been sufficient." Costas closed his eyes. "Don't want to go to Sunis," he said, and yawned. "You know I would stay, even if you ordered me away. You are my king."
"Insubordinate," the king said. Costas could hear the smile in his voice.
"Learned it from you," murmured Costas.
"You probably did. You are insufferably impressionable."
The king touched his hair.
"Costas."
Costas opened his eyes. The king's eyes were fever bright.
"My Costas,"
the king said, all affection, and Costas smiled and drifted on the lethium. And then the king kissed him. But that also might have been a dream. The Queen of Atolia sat, cold and beautiful as a statue.
"On the lips," Jen clarified.
She inclined her head.
"Thoroughly," Jen said. "He blushed like a virgin."
The cut glass set of Atolia's lips was not encouraging.
"I didn't plan it," Jen said. "Truly, it was a stupid impulse. I'll never do it again."
She lifted a long finger to her cheek. He cleared his throat and looked at his shoes.
"You said," he murmured, striving for a light tone, "that you would cut off my other hand if I took a mistress."
"Did I?" One of her black eyebrows rose. "Then brave boy for telling me this." His heart drummed in his ears.
"I thought it would be better than letting Relius tell you." He swallowed. "This is not Costas's fault," he said. "It won't happen again."
"No," she said. Her stone face dissolved into a smile. "Finally, Jen. You've pined after him for months." A beat, then.
"I have not," protested Jen.
"Since his gallant, if unnecessary, attempt to save you from the assassins in the garden," she said. He smiled.
"Even though he hated me, because it was his duty."
He paused.
"Irene," he said plaintively, "he's so simple."
"He's probably the only uncomplicated, honorable person you've ever met." Jen considered.
"There was Sophus."
She stood, red skirts sweeping the floor. "Jen," she said. She touched his cheek. He blushed. "You are not allowed to have a harem of honorable simpletons." He pouted. She tapped his cheek.
"One is enough," he agreed,
and kissed her fingers.
"My queen."
She kissed his other cheek and went on, but stopped in the doorway. "Of course," she said. "You know this means you mustn't object when Edis visits." His brow crinkled.
"Why would I object?"
"I hold her in the highest affection," said Atolia, lowering her eyelashes.
"You mean..."
"The very highest," Atolia said, smirking.
"You're joking,"
Jen said hopefully. Her laughter echoed as she walked down the stairs. The end.